I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bring on the wall, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble preview show sponsored by Bet365. My name's Marcus Speller. Luke Moore's to my left.
A nice tribute.
Jim Campbell's ahead of me.
Hello.
And Pete Donaldson's to my right.
It took me a long time to get that tribute, to be honest. I'm going to start the show because I've just noticed something happening with Marcus's iPad. All of his notes have kind of disappeared from the screen, so he's having to use his mobile phone now. See, I told you.
And wow, he's broken.
It's Marcus that's part internet, not me.
Yay! It was my AI trick.
Is Marcus a hologram of Pete's imagination?
You've got a very, very pure imagination.
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah.
Well, not a denial, is it?
What a classy imagination.
What a sexy imagination.
Very broad-shouldered.
That's enough now. Can I also attempt to start the show just by saying, when the weather's like this, should club football still be being played?
What do you mean? Like,
it should be international football or nothing?
I think they should end the season. When the weather gets like this, right, your next game's your last game of the season, or wherever you are on the table, and then bring on the cup final.
The temperature has hit 25 degrees centigrade. That means FA Cup final only, and then a tournament. That's it.
Maybe the whole league becomes next goal wins.
Yeah.
So everyone's just waiting until like the 95th minute to try and score.
Do you remember?
Shirts v Skins.
Do you remember when was it the King of Thailand? Was he the longest serving monarch in history?
I believe so, yeah.
And
like
he
that.
Died. Yeah. And in tribute, they stopped the season three games short or something like that.
Right.
And there was three teams who were still in. We talked about this, I think.
Was he not a football fan? Well,
it wasn't his decision.
It's disrespectful to play. He hated it.
Well,
it,
there was three teams who were still going for the league. Like there was league title and relegation still to be decided.
Imagine Leicester's season. Ty owned, of course.
Yeah, that's right.
Gutting.
I know, eh? So we think the weather, as you say.
Hello? We're doing what?
That'll do us.
We've been training all week.
You know very well that noise would be
yeah, it would.
Fax machine.
It would.
Ah, yeah,
it would actually, yeah.
Send around the faxes.
Good point.
Well, we do have cup football this weekend, so There's your compensation for the nice weather. It's of course FA Cup semi final,
and it means that some teams won't be playing football. So or your team might not be playing any football because they're already out. So you can go at the pub.
Yeah, although you do have a few Premier League fixtures sort of scattered around this week, aren't they?
Yeah,
quite strange.
Like a light dusting.
It's
a light dusting of Premier League.
It's a cluster bomb.
It is.
You can't play Everton on Monday.
Yeah. Well, Monday night football has been alive and well
that
for a while.
You will.
Unless you're in Germany, in which case they hate it.
They do hate it.
Why do they hate it?
I think the fan culture is very strong there, and I think they see it as a creeping commercialism and stuff. Mm. During that Freiburg Mainz game at the weekend, which we talked about on the continent, which is out now, where it was a crazy VAR decision, the Mainz fans also spent the entirety of half time throwing about 1,200 toilet rolls to the pitch. But I was going to say, Thursday night Premier League football, I'm out.
No.
It's a bit weird, isn't it? Yeah. Any other night of the week, I think that's fine. But Thursday,
I just feel like there should be one night where there isn't any. At least one.
Tuesday.
I don't know why I think that.
I mean, we do a football show and we're saying that. So Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday shouldn't be Prem. It shouldn't be Prem.
No, I don't know. You get the odd midweek fixture on a Wednesday and Tuesday.
Unless it's an officially sanctioned full programme.
Yeah, a midweek match of the day in the winter is a beautiful thing.
Wasn't there talk that they were going to move the Champions League to the weekend because it's the premier competition now and all football
that would
be
awful.
Be in that,
yeah,
and move the Premier League to midweek.
Well, they've already moved the final to Saturday night, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean,
the final used to be on a Wednesday night and that was great.
Yeah, but I think for fans, though, it's probably best that you can have the weekend.
Their argument, I think, and God knows how true this was, but they will stop at nothing to try and get things through the back door. I think, I'm fairly sure I remember one of their arguments was, yeah, but the kids can't stay up and watch it. And we're all about the kids. So it has to be Saturday evening.
I think for fans, it's probably better for a weekend. Does it not have a weekend in a city abroad?
But for fans of our age, you know, in the sort of, I remember watching the Champions League in like the late 90s. The final on a Wednesday night was a special thing.
Brilliant, yeah.
Sure.
You had the next day at school.
Yeah.
You've got to move with the times, haven't you?
Liverpool against Milan.
Yeah. That was 2005, though. I was in my mid-20s.
In a pub in Charing Cross. That's where I watched it. Yeah.
Is that where you were?
In the Big Wetherspoons. I forget the name of it.
Wetherspoons.
Big, well, they've all got different names, haven't they?
Which one you mean, yeah.
Well, where are you going to be watching Manchester United Tottenham Hotspur? It's a
Nowhere.
Big one. It's an enormous one. Would a cup win for either side cement a good season? You'd have to say for Manchester United, probably.
Yeah, and for Spurs.
Yeah, for both of them. Yeah,
a trophy win in a season is always a good thing.
Well, and a solid top four finish as
did,
well.
Did any of you watch Man United set the night on fire last night? at Bournemouth?
A good 2-0 away win is always a good result.
Yeah, I was watching it and I was thinking, this is a comprehensive win, textbook. A goal after about half an hour.
But Bournemouth had a few chances.
They did, but a goal on 70 minutes to seal it. That is your textbook away performance.
It is, yeah.
Then why is it so boring? Why is it so dull?
It's 3 points, a vital 3 points. Manchester United are second. They are the second best team in England.
When they're that dull, you sort of think, how did you ever score a goal?
Yeah.
When your expression is just minimal, how do you get the ball in the net? That's what I don't understand. It's so weird.
Like you trick it in. You bore it into going in.
Yeah.
The ball's like, oh, am I in the net again?
Falls asleep and rolls off on its own accord.
Yeah. I mean, is it really just the style of football Man United are playing this season? Because I do understand we have been very harsh on them. Now, obviously, last time round when we spoke about the home defeat against West Brom, I mean, my goodness, I think that was fair. But they are second in the league.
Yeah.
And their points tally is pretty decent. They're in the 70-odd points, which sometimes is enough to win the league. Rarely, but it has been before.
I think they got 74 points.
And they
might get over 80 points.
They might get over 80 points. Manchester City, we know how good
they've
been.
But that's what I mean. Some of the most exciting teams play counter-attack football. They can't play counter-defence.
Yeah.
They're like complete reverse.
And the plot gets even thicker and even more confusing, because if you look at the lineup they played last night, I mean, a majority of those players are on paper, like exciting characters.
Yeah.
Like, you got Martial, who came for a lot of money, is an exciting, fast player. Rashford is one of the most exciting young players in England. Lingard is a skillful, exciting player.
Lukaku.
Pogba is an interesting player. Lukaku, who came off the bench. No. Fellaini, massive hair.
Yeah.
You know, Herrera, a classy Spanish operator.
De Gea,
the best keeper in the world, arguably. Yeah. Still boring.
This is it, though, isn't it? I mean, we can give them credit about, you know, getting to 74 points at this stage and being, you know, having the best points total post-Ferguson, blah, 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 blah. But none of us support them, so we don't have to pretend we're enjoying it.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It's boring.
I don't even pretend I'm enjoying Pompey.
In 34 games, they've conceded 26 goals. Manchester City have only conceded one fewer in the league. So they've got an extremely good defensive record. Like I said, the points tally's there. It's only because Manchester City have been one of the best teams in recent history in the top flight in England. Possibly ever, some people are saying. I still don't understand it.
This kind of like us getting annoyed about how boring they are. We're so annoyed. Not us personally, but people are sort of going, oh, this is so boring. Jose Mourinho would be like, oh. Jose Mourinho would be like, oh, so, no, Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, you're right, the first time.
It's all right, it's fine.
I'm very tired, I'm going on holiday today, so get lost.
D-mob happy.
Yeah.
Because normally you're so professional, Pete.
Yep.
Yeah. But they're playing Spurs in the Cup, and I think an FA Cup win and finishing second in the league, it has to go down as a good season.
Yeah, and this is a game to look forward to, because for a couple of reasons. One is that Spurs
are playing.
Yes, well, Spurs played United in the league at Wembley, beat them 2-0, I was at the game, and they were so good, Spurs. They should have beaten 4 or 5. They were so, so much better. And if they can replicate that on the weekend, which I'm not suggesting they can, because, you know,
off the back of two not great Spurs performances.
Quite. And Mourinho teams in big semis and stuff, you'd sort of think they'll be improved.
Love a big semi.
But if they're not improved, they haven't got a chance based on that game. The other thing I wanted to bring to the table was, you've got two players here, Dele Alli and Paul Pogba, both who have received quite a lot of criticism. I was on a radio show yesterday. We spent about an hour of the 3 hours talking about Paul Pogba, and people were calling in talking about how, you know, he's not been that great and blah, blah, blah. Actually, it's the same with him and Dele Alli. Their numbers, I mean, Dele Alli's numbers this season in terms of assists and goals stand fairly well alongside his other seasons. I mean, he's had a meteoric rise, and he's maintained that, really. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a bit earlier in the season, I think, Marcus, you and I, about how Dele Alli looks better when he moves the ball quickly, and sometimes he lingers on the ball too long. But nevertheless, his numbers are good. Paul Pogba gets an incredible amount of criticism because of the transfer fee, which has nothing to do with him, and because of his personality and his lifestyle, which really isn't anyone's business unless he makes it their business.
I mean, and he sort of does.
He does a bit, but only David Silva, Leroy Sané, and Kevin De Bruyne have got more assists than him in the Premier League this season, and he has played far fewer games than all those players.
Yeah. Well, I tell you also, that those players are all from the same team shows quite. You quite how phenomenal that team has been this season.
Yeah, so based on the numbers, you can't really argue, given the difficulty that Pogba's had being played out of position, playing for a manager who I don't think really knows how to get the best out of him.
And a first season properly in England, really. Yeah.
And he's returned good numbers.
Well, one of the people who has, of course, been very critical of Paul Pogba has been his manager. I mean, I think that's one of the things. I think Mourinho has not helped Pogba's case with regards to the amount of criticism he's been receiving. Is that a Mourinho tactic? Mm. We saw him do this with Eden Hazard and countless of others who have played under
him. Well, it worked with Luke Shaw, so...
Yeah. Luke Shaw did play last night. Well,
he nearly gave a penalty away, though, didn't he? He'll be in the dungeon for a month.
But, it's a very public dungeon. It's got like plastic, like see-through walls, and Mourinho sells tickets for everyone to come and look and flagellate him.
It's a bit like that thing that David Blaine did in London many years ago when he was in a glass box,
Luke Shaw
suspended.
A box. Yeah.
That's essentially
if Luke Shaw's going to go in there, we do reinforce the bottom of it. Because
come on, that's not nice.
Same way you have to evolve.
He's a professional athlete.
He is,
allegedly.
Do you think Pogba still is suffering from the expectation people have of him because he's expected to come in for that fee and with his sort of general kind of flash look, and they're expecting like overhead kicks and sort of like.
Yeah, maybe
volleys from a million miles out.
I don't think he particularly cares. To be honest,
no, he doesn't. He's having a lovely time.
I think he's having a lovely time. I think he's a man who's quite comfortable with what his legacy will eventually become. But I think, in many ways, I think his difference between I find some of the chat about him and his flashiness quite distasteful, as discussed on the show before. But I think the main problem with him is his body language and his work rate off the ball.
Yeah.
He sort of lumbers around the pitch.
It's
kind
a
of
bit
like,
similar to Ozil, Pete.
He sort of feels like he's kind of like, you know, he's too big to, you know, put the effort in sometimes, I think. But, you know, if his numbers stack up, who are we to complain?
Annoyingly, Opta don't put out the individual players' distance covered. They do the team.
Oh, okay, right.
It's really difficult to find the individual player. I'd love to see that because, Jim, you've often said that Ozil's distance covered is actually a lot harder than people would think. I'd love to be able to see that corroborate. But I was just quickly going to make this point about Pogba because we were talking about it before we came on air. And the season that Juventus got to the Champions League final would have been 2015. Mm. Pogba had a season and a half then. He was playing in the midfield with, well, at the final of the Champions League, he was playing alongside Andrea Pirlo, Arturo Vidal and Claudio Marchisio.
Do what you want, big
boy. It's a bit different. a bit different.
Well, they had a defined system, really, that Juventus side. Everyone knew their roles. And you had a lot of experience and a lot of running, and Pogba was freed up to do what he wants. And you know, I think it was Pete off air, we were talking that you suggested he might. There's a touch of the luxury player about Pogba, and I do know what you mean. I don't, perhaps not in the traditional sense, but I know what you're saying.
I just look at the way that like someone. I'm not comparing Mo Diame to Paul Pogba, but Mo Diame
is much more hard.
Has a similar sort of body language. He's quite lumbering at times and stuff. And when he first started playing for Newcastle, I thought he was dreadful. Just didn't look. He looked off the pace every single time, but then he would occasionally come up with something brilliant. Rafa's turned him into like a really hard-working footballer and one of the best performers this season, or the back end of the season anyway. And I just think maybe it is just the way that the manager sort of deals with stuff, that he's just not getting the best out of some of his footballers.
Yeah, Spurs are currently 7-4 to win the FA Cup with Bet365, so £10 on that will return £27.50, including stake. Newcastle, sadly, no longer in the competition, Peter.
No, never mind.
But Spurs, though, they will fancy that because it's a, you know, a cliche thing to say, but at Wembley...
It's effectively a home game.
It is, well, it really is.
Based on that, do you not feel they should maybe start a goal and a man down?
Yeah, even it up a bit.
Yeah, yes, Jim. The three Spurs players included in the PFA Premier League Team of the Year, Vertonghen, Eriksen and Kane. No surprises there. David De Gea in goal, of course.
A lot of Spurs, a lot of Man City in there.
An awful lot of Man City, unsurprisingly. Every, no, Jonge.
Every year I always think of a couple of players I think should be in there. And I've
already named one.
And I would say, Jonge, that's your lookout. I'm personally distancing myself from that. But I would say perhaps maybe Sterling, who's been brilliant, and Firmino, who's been really good. But anyway, then I realised that it's voted for by the players. And it's like, you can't really argue with it.
Yeah.
One, players are really lazy, and they had to move this back to blooming... vote for it in March because they couldn't get them to come back from holiday to vote at the end of the season. And two, you can't really argue it because they're the players who play against them. So who's really going to have any more information than they are?
Also, then, to be fair, would you cut your holiday short for that? I'm not sure I would.
No, exactly. No, but the thing is, they've all got phones. Just type it in. But and the reason I say that is because I've spoken to ex-pros before, and it's the nuances and the subtleties about different types of players playing against each other is quite interesting. I've had players, midfield players, say to me, good midfield players say, do you know what? I didn't actually find it that hard to play against Roy Keane, but playing against Tim Cahill, that was such a physically tough thing to do.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though, isn't it?
So it's different nuances.
It's always sort of weird.
Players.
You always sort of see some weird quotes, like, who's the, you know, the hardest player you ever played?
Well, Danny Alves cited James Milner.
Yeah.
He said he was just everywhere.
You wouldn't expect it, would you? You wouldn't expect it.
But then they would take it from their own personal experience, and of course, that would be match by match, and whatever the tactics, however the match swung, they're not...
But I also think, Marcus, it might be because I just personally hate them.
Yeah, well, there's definitely... There'd probably be a bit of that, you would imagine. Chelsea versus Southampton is the other semi-final. Chelsea will be favourites here for a number of reasons. They beat Southampton, of course, recently 3-2 in the league. Will Giroud start ahead of Morata?
I think he should.
He's earned it, hasn't he? Certainly with a performance against Southampton previously. And clearly they can't live with him. So
There was a time, Jim, when players would literally be able to play their way into the team by doing well. Those times appear to have gone.
Yeah.
But if we were still under those rules, Giroud would be a dead cert to start.
It is odd. That sort of spun on its head, because also you'd play your way into a move as well to a better club. Those days are over now. You seem to need to throw a bit of a temper tantrum and down tools, and then you get your move.
Yeah.
In some cases, not all.
Quite. The thing with Giroud as well, though, he scored so many goals off the bench. I think, is he tied with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Well, forever in the Premier League.
I don't know. I forget the exact ramification of it, but he's right up there.
Go on, Jim. Sorry.
But that's a bit of a burden to him, because everyone knows he's so good off the bench that he almost becomes a weapon from that rather than from the start.
He should stop scoring goals when he's put on, and the manager will be like, I might have to start
him.
And
it is an underrated skill to be able to pick up the pace of a game when you come off the bench at that level. I mean, you've got to be pretty good. I mean, we've all played, all of us probably have come off the bench at Sunday league level or whatever, and it's actually quite hard. It's like an extra skill.
I've never started.
Okay, no. You're used to it. You're like Olivier Giroud. You're the Solskjaer of Sunday league, Pete. But when I look at that lineup at Chelsea, have got, and they weren't great against Southampton in the league. They started really, really poorly. And they had that 10-minute spell, which I think I might have said on this show, was almost like reminiscent of Liverpool's 10-minute spell against Milan in the Champions League final. And Southampton are so bereft of confidence that it was enough for them. But when you look at that sort of thing, that sort of lineup that Conte's a fan of playing at the moment, with Willian and Hazard behind a striker, Morata is so inconsistent. That's tailor-made for Giroud. His ability to hold the ball up, I think, again, quite underrated. And with those two creative players behind him, and Willian is so consistent. Yeah. You know what you're going to get from him. He can load bullets for Giroud all day long. And given that Giroud's just come off the back of scoring two against this exact team, you think he'd be crazy not to start him.
True. Yeah, I mean, Conte as well, it would be wonderful for him to probably have his last game in England as an FA Cup win. I mean, you know, anybody would say that he's going to leave in the summer. Mm. So to sign off with a win, just like Louis van Gaal did, of course, at Manchester United, although Louis was unaware that he was leaving.
Yeah. And it's also sort of a little bit forgotten about that. Louis and his clipboard winning the FA Cup.
Hey, top four finish and an FA Cup win.
In my mind, I can't picture him holding the FA Cup, which is very sad.
Just the clipboard.
Yeah. Yeah, just a clipboard, basically.
Yeah, he did love that clipboard, didn't he? Mark Hughes said he wants his players to enjoy the challenge of their relegation battle.
It's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, well, this match provides a little break from that, of course. They stepped it up against Wigan, where a number of Premier League clubs had fallen.
Yeah.
Will that give them any kind of encouragement, Jim, to beat Chelsea?
Well, it has to, doesn't it? Because it's the only positive they've had of late. You know, having the FA Cup run is a chance for themselves to prove that actually, you know, They are good footballers, they are good professionals at what they do, and just remind themselves that, you know, in a sense they have nothing to lose. No one's expecting them to win this, so they can go and play with a bit of freedom and remind themselves of what they're about and why they're there in the first place.
And
so
they have put,
actually,
they've put two past Chelsea recently.
So, I mean, a good performance, might even if they don't win, might be a bit of a kick up the posterior that they clearly need and just aren't getting.
I think it's tricky how they approach it, though, because they play Leicester away on Thursday, and the situation they're in, I mean, they need to win that game.
They do.
So it's almost like, I was thinking about this on the way in from the position of a Portsmouth fan. Would I rather Southampton stayed up and didn't win the FA Cup? I think I probably would, because I don't want them to have any silverware. So I think for them, they've got based on my, as a Portsmouth fan, opinion, they should prioritise the game on Thursday. So I don't know if that helps or not. But Southampton are 6-1 to beat Chelsea in 90 minutes on Sunday. So £10 return, £70 with Bet365. Should they manage an upset? And I bloody well hope they don't.
You nasty bin for a heart.
I've got to be honest.
You don't have to be sometimes.
I've got a dustbin for a heart.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. It's time for correspondence with PTD.
It is time for correspondence with PTD. Hello to so many people getting in touch with the flannels thing.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, it's a premium, not sportswear, but actually like quite fancy shirts and stuff, like some Yves Saint Laurent kind of shirts and stuff that Mike Ashley owns.
It's more upmarket.
Yeah, there are some stinking things on the website.
So it's like a sort of Tesco finest.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, my argument still stands, which is like, it's not enough just to put flannels.
No.
Given that you're broadcasting to a worldwide audience, put flannels.com or whatever.
Global brand, mate. Flannels. Well,
yeah, sounds like it. It's just passed me by.
Well, we got a message from an anonymous emailer. Hello, Ramble. Please keep this anonymous as my job requires some discretion, which I'm clearly bending the rules on here. But you'll be shocked to hear that Mike Ashley bought the Northern high-end department store Flannels and has been working on transforming the brand into a global heavyweight in the same scale as Sports Direct. My part in this was to Photoshop the Flannels logo onto a multitude of things, including his private jet and his Lamborghini, which is the most Mike Ashley experience of my career. If I'm honest, I took his focus on Flannels to be a sign he was selling at NUFC, but it seems it's just going to add to the value.
And we do mock Mike Ashley for a number of things, and I think fairly, but we must always remember that he is a self-made billionaire, so we can't be a complete idiot.
Flannel.
Self-made billionaire.
Makes you want to throw up in a fireplace, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Flannels does sound like it's a northeastern insult.
But it does a little bit, you flannel. And it sounds a bit more like a cockney.
You flannel.
Yeah. I think Pete might be a secret billionaire himself. This will come out in years.
The way I dress.
Yeah. You dress a bit like...
It's the way I dragged my suitcase through rush hour traffic.
You are looking a bit like a cross between Mark Zuckerberg and Steve Jobs to that, actually.
Oh, come on now.
You are.
Come on, Jobsy.
Yeah.
I love a bit of Zuckerberg up in court. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
He looks so weird. He's like Data out of Star Trek.
He really reminds me of... Have you seen the film Prometheus?
Mm. Yes.
He's really reminiscent of Michael Fassbender's character, yes, and that David.
Do you know who he reminds me of? Have you seen the film Social Network?
Lin-Manuel, on a rainy evening here in America, in Nazareth, Pennsylvania to be exact, I was watching the West Ham and Stoke game while...
Oh, you've got to go to Nazareth.
West Ham versus Stoke game while sat at home doing some work on my laptop. Suddenly, during a particularly boring passage of play, yes, more boring than any other passage of play in a West Ham versus Stoke game, one of the commentators, Carl Martino, blurted out, David Moyes, one of the great historic Premier League managers. We can't forget what he did at Everton.
No. The way he says that is like we're trying to. He did win Premier League Manager of the Year, by the way.
Did he?
I think maybe even a couple of times.
So did Pardew.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did.
And well done to both of them. Is there some kind of parallel universe in which Everton actually won something under Moyes? I know they're finishing some decent positions. Needless to say, the lead commentator, none other than Arlo White, simply ignored the statement and moved on.
And I understand why, but I do think we have to acknowledge, even though, as Jim correctly said, he looks like a ferryman. Ferrying teams from the land and turned out of the dead. I think we in this room would all agree he did a good job at Everton.
Oh yeah, he finished fourth with them, and then they immediately went out in the Champions League qualifying game. But still, he got them to it in the first place.
They also finished 17th around that time. As well.
It was a good Villarreal side.
It was a very unlucky draw. Yeah.
Mm. It's a Champions League, isn't it, I guess. Qualifier or not. Hello to Corm. He is Irish. He says, I've been listening to your new segment, Favourite English Moments. Reminds me of my favourite international moment. As an Irishman, it would be wrong for me to contribute to your new segment, so it's probably best for your correspondence, Pete. Before the World Cup in 2002, Ireland played Denmark in a friendly at the Old Lansdowne Road. Ireland won 3-0, and 11-year-old me went home convinced he'd won the World Cup. Or we'd win the World Cup, sorry. Poor Peter Madsen had an awful night, thanks to the stadium announcer. The BBC match report explains it best. The only black spot for the Republic was the hostile reception received by one of the Danish substitutes, Peter Madsen. The stadium announcer gave out the wrong information, telling the crowd that Peter Lovenkrantz of Rangers had come on rather than Madsen. Because of the Rangers connection, Madsen ironically was booed by some spectators every time he touched the ball.
He must have been like, what have I done? I've never even been to Ireland. My first visit.
The unsporting fans did not realise they'd got the wrong man until Lovenkrantz came on later in the game. And when everyone in the stadium realised their error, Madsen was cheered like a hero for the rest of the game.
It's not so bad.
When he touched the ball.
What's going on?
But Lovenkrantz was killed.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Peter Lovenkrantz.
No, he wasn't.
What a dude.
He was a good player.
Adam from Atlanta, my highlight of the weekend from my former hometown team, Miami FC. The picture is incredible. I won't show it now, but it's incredible. In the dying embers of the game and down 1-0, the team in desperation threw on the third goalie, Lionel Brown, as a forward. While this in itself is quite strange, the kit he was wearing was even stranger. Since it was a last-minute call, he entered the pitch with a hand-drawn kit. Honestly, it's a white t-shirt with a Sharpie on the back, a number, and the word, I guess, Brown.
Is this David Beckham's team? It's not, is it?
No, it's not. Is it Miami FC?
I thought there was a Nesta and Maldini connection with this,
right.
Wasn't there?
Yeah.
Was Nesta, I think, I don't know if he still is.
He's the Miami franchise, isn't he?
But I think it's a different team.
Is this Maldini's side?
No, probably not, to be honest.
I think Miami FC, I think Nesta was the coach for a little while, or he was certainly rumoured to be. And then Maldini, I think, was involved in the franchise because right. Beckham was trying to set one up, and then they seemed to kind of get one in,
yeah,
quite happily.
Well, there we go.
You can't say no to Paolo Maldini.
I mean,
no.
That's happening in professional football.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, isn't it?
Absolute madness. A few people got in touch talking about professional football. Bolivia. I'm not sure if it's professional or amateur, but in Bolivia, Nacional Potosí, they were playing a game against Sport Boys, the wonderfully named. And a player called Thiago dos Santos was subbed off after 33 minutes. And I thought, you know, we've seen this happen in the Premier League this season with, I think, Luke Shaw, was it, who was hooked before halftime?
Yeah.
He was incensed about this, so he tried to have a fight with the manager.
Oh.
And then the referee sent him off as a result.
Mm.
So, add insult to injury, he was subbed off and then sent off.
That's nice.
There we are.
Let's go back to the Miami FC thing. That is the team. They play in NASL, as Jim would say, the North American Soccer League. It's not Beckham's team, but they are co-owned by Paolo Maldini.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
There you are.
Maybe these things will become
Paul Dugleish is the head coach.
Paul Dugleish, okay, yeah.
Mm. Paul Dugleish.
Yeah, maybe that'll become a sort of iconic fashion thing and they'll keep doing it.
I wouldn't be against it. Yeah. I would not be against it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about the Premier League after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Beautiful young eggs. Eggs that need a mum to take care of them.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, that's a while back.
Young eggs.
It was a little bit of a while ago.
Marcus, on the running order, you've got next up Stoke City v Burnley.
Yeah, down to earth.
I'm not doing it.
Okay.
I'm going on all day. Don't start it like this.
You've missed an important trick there because it's actually Stoke versus Burnley versus Mike Dean.
That's true, actually, where the real
action's going to be.
it's Mike Dean. It's like if you think of a boxing, a festival lineup, it's like the top thing is like Mike Dean.
Yeah.
And underneath, it's like Stoke City v Burnley, and underneath that,
Premier
it's like
League.
Mike Dean's brother.
Well, modern festivals have two headliners usually, but one always has to play first, which is just bullshit. Yeah.
And sometimes bands do like a co-headline tour where they take it in turns to go on the last. Jim, am I reading between the lines here? Am I correct in the assumption that you have checked which game Mike Dean's doing before each weekend?
I happen to notice it, and it's stuck in my mind because I saw that.
You're disgusting.
I had exactly the same feelings when I looked at the running order. I thought, actually, I mean, he'll be delighted with this because it's so easy to take the headlines here, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Well, Mike Dean featuring Stoke City and Burnley will happen on the weekend, of course, and this is a must win for Stoke City.
Are their tickets more expensive because of Dean?
Quite possibly.
You're doing a Q&A at half time.
Yeah, that's right.
You can get the Mike Dean season ticket and you just get
follow him around.
Every show he's doing.
They should do that.
He's doing a Q&A during the game. He's mic'd up. And
from the M&D.
Yeah, you'd be like, right, the reason why I gave that decision was because of this.
I'm fairly certain. I'm going to book him.
Hey!
So someone on Twitter pointed this out and I looked at it again and I can't be sure either way. But there was a game. I forget the game now. Mike Dean was refereeing last weekend. It doesn't matter what the game is.
It was Southampton Chelsea.
Oh, there you go. Right, great. And there was a couple of incidents, right? And obviously he missed the Michael Alonso challenge, which he's been criticised for. But earlier in the game, there was a great shot of Deeney.
Yeah, I know the one.
Coming together of two players. So he was facing the camera and you could see him do that with his hands. And I'm
the calm down kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm about 60% sure he went, chillax. Chillax. But he might have been saying chill out.
Either way.
He definitely said one of those two things.
He never said chillax. We all want him to.
I'm running with it.
All right.
He said chillax. So hopefully you'll see it again in this game, which will have absolutely nothing else going for it.
Yeah, Stoke were very unfortunate to concede very late against West Ham. But it was lovely to see Crouch and Carroll scoring, reminding us what we could have up front in Russia.
good touches for big men.
Imagine what we could have from Peter Crouch if only we played every game against Joe Hart in goal.
What is the what was the it was 6'5" the average height of the goal scorers in that match?
Lovely,
which I really like.
Nice. Well, Andy Carroll's goal was a goal of genuine quality. It was a brilliant finish.
He's a genuine quality player, but he's
exactly.
His knees are made of peanut brittle.
A lot of people tweeting me saying, you know, Crouch and Carroll up front and John Joe supplying the balls. And I'll tell you something, that would give us our identity.
Who
back.
Knocks down?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to wrestle this back. But we can't talk about that.
You have to have Sterling in behind so he can run on with the flick-ons.
Yeah, stop this.
No. Damn it all. The weather's sunny. I want to dream about nonsense.
You're getting close to ruining the World Cup for me.
can I please hear dam busters coming out of your head.
Let me tell you something, Luke. There'll be plenty of Englishmen who'll ruin it for you. Yeah, don't worry about that.
But I wouldn't like it to be someone I could trust. But I previously thought I could trust. But on the Stoke City thing, they need to win this massively. I mean, to have any chance at all, and even that, it may not be enough, but they need to win it. So there's a chance they're really going to go at Burnley, which means Burnley might well have a lovely time hitting them on the break and nick it 1-0.
Absolutely, yeah. It's all set up for that, really, isn't it?
I mean, set up for a Chris Wood winner, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or an Ashley Barnes, like, header.
I can honestly see a really high-scoring match here, just inexplicably, yeah.
Well, Stoke's goal difference is minus 33, so...
Well, that's like, that. You know, you might almost remove a point for that, you know. I mean, they are away... Stoke need to win this. They're away to Liverpool next. Then they're at home to Palace. Then they're away to Swansea. Other teams down there have a game in hand on them. They need to go into that game with Swansea on the last day needing. I think if they go into that game needing a win to stay up, they've got themselves in a good position.
Definitely. I called it at the very start of the season.
Yeah,
I said that Stoke are in big trouble this season. They look really badly balanced. They look like I've got a bunch of attacking players. I don't fancy it. And I don't think they've got any quality. And they should be. But the thing is, under Hughes, they should have been better than they were. But
it's a chance
for them. Yeah, it is. But the disappointing thing, Marcus, you're absolutely right. If you're a team that knows, look at Benitez's Newcastle. Right? So Benitez knew that Newcastle have exceeded expectations. They've done brilliantly. They're not going to get relegated now. But Benitez knew there was a chance they'll be right amongst it. So don't get battered every week. If they haven't, we've said this time and time again, they haven't been beaten heavily at all this season, Newcastle. One bad result, really, against Man United, 4-1. They went a goal up in that game. Other than that, they've not been battered. Stoke have been battered loads.
Yeah.
And as a result, as you rightly say, Marcus, it's a cliche, but it's absolutely true, that is worth an extra point of good goal.
And those kind of results kind of really knock the stuffing out, you know what I mean?
Like, they do.
Bereft of confidence, they make.
Yeah, hugely.
Well, Stoke, they're 5 points behind Swansea. Now, Swansea and Southampton have a game in hand. Southampton are playing in the Cup. A win for Stoke City. Now, Swansea are away, to Manchester City this weekend. Now, even though City have won the title, you would imagine they would beat them. Then they play Chelsea to Swansea. So it is a chance for Stoke. You know, if they can win, they're 3 points above Southampton. Southampton got a couple of games in hand, but you still put pressure on Southampton to do that.
Points on the board, I've always maintained.
Exactly.
That.
So if they can go 3 points, they can cut that down to 2 points with Swansea. And as I say, Swansea have two games which you wouldn't fancy them getting anything from. You know, they just have to win it. It's as simple as that, really. Turning the tables round, Burnley will be up for this because a win for them would keep them in the hunt for sixth place. And if they could finish above Arsenal, as a lot of the pundits were saying, Sean Dyche would probably be manager of the season.
Yeah.
And for Sean Dyche, you know, he will motivate his players. They've been motivated all season. They had a bit of a spell around sort of Christmas and the New Year where they lost a run at games or didn't get any wins. But surely, to finish sixth in the Premier League for them. I mean, wherever they finish, seventh, it's still a great season. But Dyche, this is not a selfish thing, but the players will think to themselves, maybe, I don't know, perhaps not, but if Dyche got manager of the season for finishing sixth above Guardiola this season, it would be incredible.
Yeah, it'd be
for
phenomenal.
Him. And for the whole club as well.
Of course.
Absolutely. Stoke are 13-10 to beat Burnley. That's a £10 with Bet365. We'll return £23, including stake. Just to get that in there. But one thing, there's not been a lot made of a story that was in the newspapers a couple of days ago, maybe earlier this week, which is that if Burnley finish above Arsenal, it throws Arsenal's commercial sort of juggernaut of the summer into massive disarray.
Yeah.
If they finish seventh and don't win the Europa League, they have to start their new Europa League campaign on July 26th. They've got to cancel all their commercially lucrative pre-season tours, which is befitting, and in a way, it's quite a symbolic blow to them. Yeah. We're a big club. We do these money-spinning pre-season tours with Man City, with Juventus.
Yeah,
well, you can't do that anymore because you're playing someone from Malta in July. That is humbling for them. So Arsenal might need to use a lot of motivation to try and make sure they finish above Burnley.
But also, World Cup year, you don't have to be going back to work or you know, playing football again weeks after the tournament.
Yeah, it already looks like a potentially very jumbled, difficult pre-season, which you don't want in April.
I think it's 11 days after the World Cup final.
Well, I mean...
Enjoy your break. It's worse than working for the bloody ramble.
It's the last thing Ozil wants. Mm,
yeah.
You know, play the World Cup final and then back on preliminary round.
Well, it's the English players I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Well, there's none of them at Arsenal, and they won't probably go beyond the second round, so it should be fine.
Jack Wilshere will have his new 7-year contract by then.
Wilshere said this week he's not staying, hasn't he?
Yeah.
It's all going on.
This week. Who knows what he'll be saying next week. But they are playing West Ham Arsenal at home. And as Luke has just mapped out there quite neatly for us, they need to win. It would be humiliating if they finished below Burnley in the league.
Yeah, it's not the home form that's the worry, though, as we've discussed so many times on the show. So you would think, I know obviously West Ham are motivated as well to sort of get themselves out of a bit of trouble. And they've proven tricky opponents for Arsenal in the past at times. I would hope Arsenal could certainly get this one over the line and you know, rebuild some confidence again. They have to get an away. It sounds ridiculous to be saying this about Arsenal, but they have to get an away win in the remaining, as soon as possible. It's Old Trafford next. To just build that confidence and not have this one game to the other as a sort of brittleness where you can't really look at any forthcoming fixtures and go they'll win that, they might lose that, that might be a struggle. You kind of feel a bit concerned about all of them,
well, also,
just because of the strange state of the confidence.
They've also got a fascinating end to the season, Arsenal. I mean, they've got this Man United game away, sandwiched between the two Atletico Madrid games, which are massive for them for reasons. Then they actually play Burnley after that.
Right,
and then they go away.
I didn't see that in the fixture list. Yeah. That's lovely.
They play Burnley after that, and then they go away twice to end the season. They go away to Leicester and away to Huddersfield.
Yeah.
And if Huddersfield are still fighting for their lives, and Leicester are a team that can hurt you, we all know that. I mean, it's a make or break situation for Arsenal.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? And you should look at those fixtures, and it shouldn't feel like such a tightrope, but that's just the situation Arsenal have played themselves into.
There shouldn't be the much on Arsenal versus Burnley.
Absolutely.
In terms of the two clubs.
Really.
Yeah. Jim.
I think what's really important this weekend in particular, it'd be very good to see a commanding and confident performance from Skodran Mustafi in particular, because he's had people on his back a lot.
Not mostly me, including you.
One of the
me
people
too.
On there. and you know, for good reasons, because he's had some poor performances, but he needs to step up and stop that becoming a thing, because sometimes, you know, players become a bit of a lightning rod for all fans concerned, and he's the cause of all our ills, let's boo his every touch.
I think it already is a thing.
Maybe there's a touch of that with Paul Pogba, as we touched
on. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Slightly different.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, second.
£35 million got around Mustafi. Not that different. Not that different.
But is this a chance, though? Let's not lose sight of the bigger picture. A chance for West Ham to ensure their Premier League status.
Didn't they have like three goals disallowed in that match? Incredible.
I think you're right.
Do you know what, though? It was, you know, looking at the table, considering, you know, if Stoke had won that game, they'd be up to 30 and West Ham would be on 34 points. It was actually a vital goal that Andy Carroll scored there, because it keeps Stoke down there. And obviously it knocks on West Ham a point. But West Ham, you know, they're running. They're away to Arsenal. They won't be favourites for that. Then they play Man City at home, Leicester away, Manchester United at home, and then Everton at home. Oh. So there's one or two winnable games there, but they're playing both Manchester clubs. So that point was a huge one, actually. That might be a bit generous to say it was a huge one. But still, I think it was just enough. I don't think West Ham will go down, because I'm not sure Stoke and Southampton will get out of it. But a big point, nevertheless. And it was nice to see big Andy Carroll get in there.
I reckon they'll pick points up against Man City just on the beach. Don't worry about it.
Do you think?
I
don't know. I don't think Pep Guardiola does the beach.
A la Newcastle beating Spurs that time.
Yeah, but
Spurs weren't champions, were they?
Well, it would have worked even less hard, wouldn't it?
I think if you're being as dispassionate as possible about it, I think realistically, if you look at Huddersfield in 15th, any team in 15th and above, I think, are fine. Because it's a 7-point cushion, and there's, some teams have got 5 games left, others have got 4. Is it really realistic to see Southampton making up a 7-point deficit?
No, I don't think it is. We're
given that Huddersfield and West Ham are probably going to pick up at least one or two more points.
Well, I just think taking the fixtures into account and so on, I think that Palace have winnable games and they've got a good win, obviously, against Brighton. I think they'll be okay. I think you're looking at, even with Swansea, that 5-point gap, I think, will be enough. But really, Swansea will be the ones. I know there's only a point in it between Swansea and Palace and they have a game in hand, but I think Swansea will be the ones who the others are really trying to catch, aren't they?
Well, Chris Hughton, I was meant to say, has done such a good job because he's obviously seen that they've got arguably the hardest run of any promoted team into the Premier League in history. And he's given them enough wriggle room to still be fine, given that four or five games out, he knew they'd have to be in that position because there's really a little chance of them getting hardly anything at all. West Ham, who I do think are fine, are 5-1 to beat Arsenal at the weekend. £10 with Bet365 returns £60, including stake.
There you go. Before we go to our best bet, a Zlatan Ibrahimovic World Cup update, gentlemen. He said on the Jimmy Kimmel show, obviously he was on the Jimmy Kimmel show. We talked about him on Monday's show when he sort of hinted and said, you know, if I decide to go, then I'll go. Well, he said on Kimmel's show, I'm going to the World Cup. Yes, a World Cup without me wouldn't be a World Cup. That's obviously despite not having played in one before.
Yeah.
he went on to say,
what about all the ones before you were born, Zlatan? 1970. No.
He went on to say, I just said I'm going to the World Cup. If I say more, people will hag me, so I have to be careful what I say now. There's nothing more you can say.
Yeah. I know, but to be fair, he doesn't say he's going as a player, does he? Have you seen the clip?
Oh, all right. So is that the technicality?
Yeah, absolutely. If you've seen the clip, that very much seems the case. The crowd are going absolutely wild for him. It's properly like Zlatan crack in America.
Do you remember when Neymar did, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel, and he had to kick a ball over a road in Hollywood. So he was on one building. And he had to boot a ball into a goal over the road.
And what have you ever done?
He messed it up every time. It was so funny.
I had to get David Bentley in to do it.
You know, previously we talked on this show about how disrespectful it is. And I think we might have talked about it in context of Francesco Totti.
Yeah.
Saying that the players who've done well enough to get you to qualify for the tournament should be respected. I actually don't think that's the case with Sweden. Because Zlatan is still... I got a lot of star quality about him. And if you look at the forward players Sweden have got in their team, it's clearly not the strongest part of their squad. I mean, you've got a guy called Isaac Kiese-Tellin who plays for Vaslan Bereren that I've never heard of.
Yeah,
you've got John...
possession
got
football.
John Guidetti plays for Alaves who doesn't really score goals. Ola Toivonen, okay, plays for Toulouse. He's all right. And he's got a few for Sweden. And Marcus Berg is playing in the Middle East.
So it's nice to have a Marcus in there.
Yeah, is absolutely true. So I suggest he stays.
Berg's in.
It's better to have his Zlatan in there, though, isn't it?
I think with...
Even the most hardened of Marcus Speller fans would probably agree with that.
No, we'll have to find them and interview them. But I think with the Sweden forward line, if there is somebody who's in contention who's hardly played, you know what I mean? I think if it was a striker who's maybe had a couple of substitute appearances, if he loses out to Ibrahimovic, then I think that would be understandable. But I'm sorry, there is something about, oh, I'm retired, and then they get to the tournament. I'll go on then.
One last job.
And
it's even more cheeky because you could argue that actually the reason they qualified was because Zlatan retired, because they're much more of a team on the pitch without him, because they're not always looking to him. Uh-huh. But he's still going. That's what I say.
Because he's decided.
Yeah.
I think that's the way it is. If the coach decided, and the manager's, you know, it's up to him what he does with the team, and if he wants to bring Ibrahimovic back in, because Ibrahimovic is going on talk shows in America touting himself, that's a bit, there we are. Mm. But it's time for our best bet with Bet365.
It is, and Ed Gibson is still in the hot seat after breaking our barren run last week. Nice one, Gibbo.
More surprising than Joey Barton getting a job.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Maybe we'll talk about that on Monday's show. That's something for us to get our teeth into.
Yeah, I heard about that on the radio station I was at yesterday, and they said, apparently, Joey sent a message in saying, oh, I can't do any shows at the moment because all will become clear. And he was absolutely loving it, and now it has been revealed. Anyway, Gibbo. Gibbo's the man at the moment, no, not Barton.
Go on, Gibbo. Step.
Gibbo has gone for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to score first and Arsenal to beat West Ham this weekend, which is currently at 3-1 with Bet365.
Nice bet, like that.
£50 on that will return £200 including stake, with all proceeds going to Prostate Cancer UK. You must be over the age of 18 to gamble, and do gamble responsibly. And for more information on that, begambleaware.org is your destination, and that is our best bet with Bet365. And before I move on to Peter, because we've got Going for Gold, because we moved out to Thursday, excitingly, get behind Gibbo.
Yeah.
So many people on Twitter with their finger hovering over the tweet button trying to have a pop at us when the best bet doesn't come in. Get behind it. Be a part of the team.
Absolutely.
Your
Absolutely.
Country needs you.
Indeed. Good luck, Gibbo.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, as promised, it's time for Going for Gold. When they're going
for Gold.
It's back.
It's back, and it's on Thursday for once.
Previously known as Going for Grintles.
Barry Grintles.
Sam has come up with these. Sam, thank you, Sam, for these clues. Evening, Pete. Thought I'd chip in another set of clues after you ignored my Robbie Slater clues in favour of someone who obviously did a much better job for the same red-headed legend. I have therefore upped my game, or at least endeavoured to do so. So get ready. Strap yourselves in.
Stop, is it Robbie Slater?
No, it's not Robbie Slater. And you've missed out on...
No, I haven't. You haven't started.
Joking. I was born...
Oh, sorry, Pete. Before you get into this, can I just put a special note out there to Sam Blakely, who emailed in, Going for Gold, to Luke at the Football Round.
Yeah, I've read that before.
Yeah, that was And then I think he emailed that. Yeah, and then he emailed those clues to me saying, sorry, I emailed it to Luke at thefootballramble.com. And then another email said, oh, clue four is wrong. He's having a nightmare.
Oh. Sam Blakely, you are the worst listener we've got.
I like him. I was born on the 27th of July, 1965.
Old.
Old gold.
Hang on a minute.
Go and have a go.
Stop.
Have a little spin.
I was stepping up there earlier. I'll step up there now. Stop. Roberto Baggio.
Incorrect.
Stop. Franco Baresi.
Incorrect.
Baresi probably a bit older.
I played an impressive 696 career games, but only managed a not-so-impressive 54 goals and just one hat-trick.
The problem with this is, it's an old player, and the majority of memorable players from back in the day are forwards. Yeah. You chuck a defender or whoever it is in the mix with that sort of goal return.
Well, it's not necessarily a defender.
He's not going to have 700 games without scoring any goals.
How many goals does it pick?
54 goals.
So you might be a midfield player, I suppose.
Just one hat-trick, though.
Yeah.
But you said disappointingly. I don't know whether that's a throw us off the scent or not.
1965 is his date of birth, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Carry on.
I captained my national team at two World Cups and was named in FIFA's All-Star squad for the 98 World Cup.
Stop.
Okay, Luke first.
Did the Didier Deschamps.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Sorry, was it 54 career goals, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop. Brian Laudrup.
Incorrect.
Yeah, he's probably got more. Maybe not that old.
You don't have to rationalise why it was a poor guess every time.
Yeah. And it was wrong.
And that is the key takeaway here.
I swear Marcus does the ramble to do Going for Gold. Jim?
Stop. Carlos Valderrama?
He's incorrect. Incorrect.
I was once, in the star team in the 98 World Cup.
I was once sent off for a fight with a player now better known for his range of flavoured condoms.
Stop. Emmanuel Petit?
Incorrect. Continuing my penchant for trouble, I also missed the opening game of the World Cup in 2002 after getting into a dispute with Roberto Carlos, and I once threw a punch at El Diego.
Stop. Dunga.
Incorrect.
I think you're right with the Brazil line. I think it's got to be a Brazilian.
Threw a punch at El Diego, could be anyone.
Yeah. It's got to be a Brazilian. It has to be.
So he had a fight.
Stop.
With...
Is it Cafu?
Incorrect.
Sorry, can you repeat
Continuing my penchant for trouble, I also missed the opening game of the World Cup in 2002 after getting into a dispute with Roberto Carlos, and I once threw a punch at El Diego.
Stop. Edmundo?
Incorrect.
This is a good one.
This is very good.
Yeah.
In 2001 season, I played for the Strasbourg side, which spent the whole of the season in the bottom three before getting relegated. That didn't stop us winning the French Cup, though, and I was proud to score the winning penalty.
I'm just thinking of 98 and 2002 Brazilian players. Really?
Do you know what? I bet it might not be a Brazilian, though. Let's not get sucked into that.
Could be an Argentinian, but... The problem is, Marcus, you're talking about being named in the team of the tournament in 98. Brazil had a good tournament. And in 2002 as well, obviously, they were there and did well.
Stop. Leonardo.
Incorrect.
That's a good guess, that.
I was nicknamed the Bulldog.
Oh, it's got to be a midfield. It's got to be a midfield.
Stop. Cesar Sampaio.
Incorrect.
Ah, balls.
Nearly swore there. This one's really good.
This is a really good one. I don't think many listeners will be getting this.
I think they will.
You've got one more clue left.
Well, oh, no.
Go on.
I don't think Jim's guessed this round, no?
Go on, Jim, name a Brazilian who was in that side. We've gone through a lot of them.
The law is, if you get to the end, Pete, Marcus literally has to guess Barry Grintle. And that's the end, and that's the end of yeah, going for Grintle.
I don't have a
Jim, think of like one of the centre-halves.
No, I just know.
It doesn't. He's not got a guess.
Your final clue.
Go on.
I was a goalkeeper.
Oh! Stop! Taffarel.
Incorrect.
Bollocks!
Stop! Rogério Ceni.
Incorrect.
Stop! José Luis Chilavert.
Correct.
Yes! Well done, Jimbo.
Well done, Jimmy.
Oh, that was lucky. Oh, that one.
Only one hat trick. What a loser.
Taffarel's not got 60 goals.
He was in that. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. He was in the. Sorry, I forgot that clue. But
no one listener has got that.
That was a smart one. No, yeah.
We've got over 50 listeners and nowhere have any of them.
Do you know what, though?
Well done, Sam. That
was
great.
With Chilavert, you're right, because I forgot about the goals. And I thought all star team in the 1998 World Cup. Paraguay got knocked down the second round.
Yeah.
All-star team. You've got to go further than that, surely.
Yeah.
Talk to the all-star
stripping
team.
You of that because of Marcus's point.
But Taffarel never scored 60-odd career goals, quite clearly.
Hat-trick!
That's brilliant.
Do you remember that little medal he used to have in his goal? He used to kiss it before the game.
Oh, that's right.
Didn't he join a cult as well after he retired?
That's Carlos Roa.
Yeah, that's the Argentinian keeper. Yeah. Who he quit playing on a certain date because he thought the world was going to end.
Yeah.
Never understood that.
No, I think he quit before it.
Preparation
for that. Yeah.
Has he been seen playing since?
Yeah. Well, is the end of the world happening in the afternoon? Or I've got a game.
maybe they'll have some brilliant matches in a bunker somewhere.
Probably is. Yeah. Probably still there.
I don't know. Drinking rainwater.
Playing table football.
Drinking rainwater. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. It's been a pleasure having you with us. It's been a pleasure having going for gold. On this show. We look forward to it on this show again next week. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Petey.
See you later.
Goodbye from me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.